From KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. Last week, Hawaii became the latest state to allow gay and lesbian couples to marry, and Missouri Governor Jay Nixon allowed gay couples legally married in another state to file joint state tax returns. Psychologist Wes Crenshaw says moves like these don't surprise many teens. They live in a culture changing so quickly that they have little common experience with young adults just a few years older. Today, he's back with two teens to discuss what it's like to be an LGBT young adult these days and how attitudes are changing. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Last week, Hawaii became the latest state to allow gay and lesbian couples to marry. In March, the Washington Post and ABC News poll found that 58% of Americans now support legalizing gay marriage. For the 18 to 29 crowd, that number hit 81%. In his column last week, Dr. Wes Crenshaw says that these stats actually understate the trend, particularly for gay and lesbian teens who live in a culture that's changing so quickly that they have little common experience with young adults, even just a few years older. Dr. Wes is back with a pair of young people to discuss what it's really like for LGBT teens today. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist. He writes the weekly Double Take Advice column for teens and parents in the Lawrence Journal World. He's the author of the Dear Dr. Wes series of books for teens and parents and a forthcoming guide to successful living with ADHD titled I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not. And Dr. Wes Crenshaw, always good to have you here.
Good to Welcome be here, back, as always.
He's joined by Matt, who is an out gay senior at Lawrence High School. Matt, nice to have you.
Nice, yeah. Thanks.
And Casey's a transgendered female-to-male freshman at an area college. And Casey, welcome to you, too.
Great to be here.
So in last week's Double Take column, Wes, teen and co-author Kendra Schwartz wrote this. She said many adults were surprised when an openly gay student was crowned homecoming king at Lawrence High School this fall. It came as no surprise to the student body. Not only did I obtain many positive quotes about what it's like to be gay at Lawrence High, but my mom sent the story to all of our extended family. They were thrilled to hear that a school in Kansas could be so accepting. It wasn't always that way here or anywhere else. Well, Matt, you were that homecoming king. How did that feel for you to win that award?
Well, it was really interesting. I didn't feel like it was anything different from me being a gay student at Lawrence High School. I was really proud of the fact that my student body elected me on the basis that they thought I was a good representation of the students at Lawrence High. Personally, I don't see me being gay as affecting the fact that I was elected homecoming king, but it was just an honor anyways.
Were you surprised?
A little bit, yeah, because yeah. There were several like football players and people on homecoming court, and I wasn't really expecting anything, but it was really humbling and an honor to be able to be elected by my fellow students.
So the football players, their votes canceled each other out, and here you are.
Yeah, that's what my mom said.
Yeah, yeah. Casey, what do you make of this development that Matt is a homecoming king here?
Well, I'm not really surprised knowing Matt.
But, you know
I think,
Matt.
So, yeah, Matt yeah. and I mm-hmm. went to high school together while mm-hmm. I was there. But I think it's really great because even a couple, like when I was a senior, that wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have. And mm-hmm. I mean, of anywhere, Lawrence High is definitely the place that it would happen. But it's really great that it did. And it's great that Matt did it because Matt's just fantastic.
So you're saying this even a few years ago, you don't think it would have happened?
No, I don't think it would have.
Because?
I mean, even in the last couple of years, things have gotten better. I mean, Lawrence High has always been a pretty great place, but acceptance has just gone so much higher lately.
Well, that's one of the themes of our show today, Dr. Wes, because one of the points here is that attitudes and mores and thinking about all this changing very, very quickly out there. That's one of the points you want to make today.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. People might want to know the chronology of this. Kendra my co-author and I were discussing doing a show like this, and I said, who would you recommend I get in touch with that really has their finger on this pulse? And she suggested Matt, and Matt suggested Casey. And I was not expecting any homecoming royalty triumphs. And Kendra wrote that in the column last week. That's the first I knew. And I emailed her back and said, does this happen to be anyone I know? And she wrote back and said, yeah, it's Matt. So we weren't even planning that. And it just shows you, and I like what Matt said, and it illustrates the change in attitude. There isn't a gay factor in this. It's just people like Matt. People enjoy him and his way of being, and they thought he'd make a neat homecoming king.
And what do you make of this? What do you make of this, Wes? I mean, again, we're talking about a sea change in society, and again, one that's happening really, really quickly.
Yeah, a year ago, wrote in the column that it was actually a little over a year ago, I said that I thought in my lifetime that labels like gay and straight and bisexual, et cetera, would probably become less important amongst at least the group of people who currently identify as something other than straight.
And here we are 12 months later.
Exactly. I said in the column, I'm not going to have to live very long to see that happen. And I think what's interesting and what defines some of the discussion today, and I'm interested in what other folks may have to say, is this is uncomfortable, I think, not just for the straight community. I think it's uncomfortable for older gay folks and bisexual and lesbian folks. And by older, I mean the ones who are 23. Without those labels, we like labels an awful lot.
Because in our society. It helps us define each other, right?
Exactly right. Yeah. And it also limits us to who we are now without being able to explore further. And I think that's changing, and teenagers are leading the way.
Let me get our listeners involved here. It's a good suggestion, Wes. I'm wondering if our listeners buy this notion that labels and sexual identity are becoming a thing of the past. To what extent is all of this inevitable? And we're also wondering, can a young person under 16 or 17 really have a clear sense yet at that point in their lives what his or her sexuality really is all about? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or you can tweet us @kcurupdate. Maybe we should get some labels straight here. We're talking about labels here, Wes. LGBT stands for what? And sometimes the letter Q's thrown in there, and what should we pay attention to? Matt, you want to take that?
I defer to Matt.
Okay, Matt, you're on.
Okay, well, let's hope that I get this right, because I'm not entirely sure all the time. But at my current...
If you're not sure, the rest of us are in trouble.
LGBT would be lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and that is the community that is usually associated together. And then sometimes Q is thrown in there. And I'm not entirely sure what the Q means all the time. Casey, do you want to chime in on there?
Well, there's really two things that the Q usually means. It either means queer or it means questioning. And those kind of go together a little bit. And queer, in this case, is just like an overarching anything not straight or quote-unquote normal.
You know, older folks, Casey, are going to see that word as a bad thing to say to somebody.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting word in that because it has been a bad word for a long time. And people have gotten it used as slurs, and it has a really rough history. But I think our generation is doing a really good job of reclaiming that word.
Why? Why do you want to reclaim a word that sort of has these negative connotations to it? Because it implies something out of the mainstream, something odd a little bit, at least it does in my mind.
Well, I think, especially just with the word queer, it's a very good, just a very broad word. Like, and kind of what Dr. West was saying, where we don't need to identify as, like, strictly as we always have. Queer is a very good overarching, like, I don't just like the opposite gender, or I'm not cisgender, or things like that.
Wes?
Yeah, well put, Casey. I had to struggle with this. I come to this work as a therapist, as a couples therapist. Next year I'll be getting my certification as a sex therapist. But I didn't really get into it to be working in the gay and lesbian community. That's folks that have come to me. And I humble myself to learn from them what is working for them. That's part of why I got so interested in this, is because they're teaching me as I'm helping them cope with aspects of their life. So it's a really nice synergy. And I argued and argued about this queer thing with my clients, trying to understand where it's coming from. And Casey said it well. Queer is non-straight. And because they're moving away from labels that are more specific than that, while that may be irritating to us, and I finally had to come to a piece about it, queer works well to simply say we are together in that way.
Mm-hmm. You've actually gone so far as to say, Wes, that the change, the emerging issue now isn't the wider acceptance of gay and transgender people. It's the abandonment of labels. And you mean what by that?
Well, I mean that we've got 81% of folks between the ages of 19 and 29 who support gay marriage. Now, that's kind of a blunt instrument to figure out attitude. It doesn't get a very precise understanding of what that means, but 81%, that's the current young voters, and it is the future young voters block. So that's almost a done deal, and I understand there are listeners who are horrified by that, but it's probably close to a done deal. It's happening all the time. The new frontier in the queer community is to not be as self-identifying as one thing. That there is a term now used by some people, and I don't know what you two's view of this is. I'm kind of curious. It is the term pansexual. And this means, as I understand it and communicate it, is you choose someone to love, you choose someone to feel intimate with, and then you work around the sexual equipment issues. You deal with them as a person first and as a sexual partner second.
I'm guessing here that the concern about labeling folks is they're just simply too confining.
I think
people
that's,
go way beyond the notion of any one or two words. Matt, do I have that right?
Yeah. In my experience with, because I don't identify as pansexual, but I've met some people who identify as pansexual. But my experience has been is that it's a term to get away from bisexual, because mm-hmm. bisexual just drives home the fact that it's binary and that there's only two genders. And there's, I mean, we're on a whole new frontier of like gender minority and all different things that are happening. And so I think that that term in a way came about because they didn't want to enforce the fact that it's just male, female.
Mm-hmm. You buy that, Casey?
Oh, definitely. That's what I was going to say, is it's very much just a love of all genders as opposed to both genders. And I think that's an important distinction to make.
So we're sort of moving towards this notion that we're all just people and you can worry about the sexual component of it later on if you choose to show interest in that area. We're just folks.
Yeah.
Am I hearing that right?
Pretty much.
Okay. Wes,
Yeah, that's exactly. I think they said it very well. And I think we're all adapting to this. One of the things I think is funny in prepping these two young people is they have this language, like you just heard Casey use the word cisgendered, and we'll probably talk about what that is later. I've had to have them educate me, and they think it, you know, they're like smirking at me right now because I'm like this old dumb person, and they have
we're
to,
all old dumb people,
but,
yeah.
But I think what these two do well, and I would reach out to young people in the queer community to also work on, is being patient with us as we're learning, and I really trust the sincerity of them with this language. It isn't just like they're, you know, what's the newest hip way to talk. That mm-hmm. isn't it. This is meaningful language, and it's important for us to try to learn it if we're families and friends and therapists and community members. So as we're going through today and you're like, I need a glossary, maybe we'll post that on my web. You write one up and I'll all post right. it on my website. Yeah. It is hard sometimes to learn the language.
We're talking this morning about changing attitudes involving the LGBT community. Again, our conversation phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. We want to know if you buy this notion that labels and sexual identity are becoming something of the past. Things are changing out there. 816-235-2888. Laura from Mission, Kansas. Laura, good morning.
Good morning. I have a couple comments to share with you all today.
Yes.
I went to high school at Shawnee Mission East in Johnson County.
I know it well, Laura.
Oh, yes. Wonderful school. So I can't remember if it's 2008 or 2009. We elected a gay homecoming king and a gay presidential candidate for us who won. So it was awesome. But they were wonderful people. They were very well qualified. And when the Fred Phelps supporters came and rallied across the street from my high school, we held a peaceful rally across our side of the street. So as they were shouting terrible things our way and had the signs, we actually raised money and donated that money to corporations that support LGBT communities. So that was cool. The second comment I had was about labeling, and I'm actually in an interracial relationship, and I'm bisexual myself, and I've noticed that I get more looks when I'm with this person who's African-American, you know, holding hands and whatnot in public, than I would with one of my previous girlfriends. Hmm. And I think it's because it's hard for people to tell if you are bisexual or gay or lesbian sometimes, and it's much easier to physically see if you are, you know, a minority in race.
That's
so maybe that's why, at least for the LGBT community, labeling is not as, like, obvious, so
mm-hmm.
to speak.
You know, Laura, and we're all friends on this show, so I don't want to start a new controversy, First of all, there's a whole area of study within the queer community about how race and identity go together. So that's an interesting area. KU just did an amazing play. I wish it was coming up and I'd recommend it, but it was called And I and the Silence, which raises both of those questions with just two characters on a stage. And it was amazing. But the second thing I will say is I think we may possibly get over biases about sexual identity and gender in this culture sooner than we're going to get over biases about race. And
I would agree.
I wondered what you would say. And I think it goes a little deeper than just the you can tell the difference theme. I think it is there's something so ingrained in our society about racial inequality and perceptions of other races that
goes back decades and even centuries,
does,
as opposed to sexual labels, which are a fairly recent phenomenon.
It seems maybe, you know, I have a degree in sociology, but I'm kind of guessing here. Maybe as we have moved towards greater tolerance in our later years in this country, we're more ready to process new things than we would have been 200 years ago. Maybe that we haven't had the chance to enslave gay people or something and get off into a terrible history with them that we now have trouble recovering from. Now, I don't want that to turn into the topic of our discussion today, but I thought you brought up such a good point.
Oh, Laura, thank you for taking my call.
I'm sure glad you called, Laura. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Tam from Kansas City, Missouri. Tam, you're on Up to Date. Good morning. Hello, Tam.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Tam.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you transfer over. I'm a 59-year-old lesbian, and I have whiplash.
Yeah.
I bet.
Well, you mentioned earlier that it might be uncomfortable for some of us that are older. It's not uncomfortable. We're awe-inspired.
Mm.
It's a little, I understand what you mean by uncomfortable because it's a little that way. I wasn't fully out of the closet until my mid-40s in terms of people that work and other places that knew I was gay. You know, I'm a little too young for Stonewall, but the, you know, I lived most of my life with being gay was sort of a badge of the underground, and you had this whole language with other people that you knew. They were family or they were members of the choir, or you know, it was that kind of thing, and it was almost like we were proud of being you know, under the radar.
Well put.
And I remember when I live on the Missouri side, I work on the Kansas side. And I remember being not surprised when Missouri passed a constitutional amendment against gay marriage, but I was ashamed of them, mm-hmm. you know, and I was ashamed to be a Missourian at that point. But I wanted to say, you know, this is must be just a phenomenal time to, you know, to be a young gay or lesbian or transgender, because there's just so much acceptance.
Yeah.
And they don't have to deal with all of the, I mean, I was married because I was expected to be, and that was a huge mistake. And, you know, but you don't have to go through that now. And I just wanted to let them know how proud I am, you know, of them. And you're right. It is different for those of us that are right. older. We're a little shell-shocked.
Tim, I'm glad you called. And I'm just wondering, Matt, from your perspective, and given what Tam just said, this notion that things have changed so quickly, do you have a sense of that, that you are in such a different place than where Tam was just a few decades ago?
Yeah, of course. Last year in my history class, we were assigned a project on turning points in history, and I did mine on the Stonewall Uprising. Mm. And so when you said that you're a little young for Stonewall, yeah, I've done a little research on that. But I mean, it's such an honor to be able to talk to you and to get your experience, but I guess I want to let you know that I'm in a place in my life where I'm so blessed that people don't look at me and see that the first thing they see is gay.
Mm-hmm.
They see me as a musician or like a student or something else. And I find that really uplifting, I guess. I would love to get to a point where it really didn't matter.
Yeah. And how far away from that point do you think we are?
I think we're closer than you might think, but I also think it's not going to be instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's been huge strides in just like the last couple of years.
Well, and teenagers are leading the way. That's why we wanted to do the show the way we're doing it is. It's the young people that are leading the way toward what Tam sees as the aspiration for the community.
Casey, do you share that sort of notion that, you know, just a few years ago things were so differently? Do you have much of a sense of appreciation that this is a different time?
Oh, definitely.
In fact, in some ways, a remarkably different time?
Well, definitely, because I came out as queer, let's go with that, my, like, early sophomore year of high school. And my parents were terrified. Not of me, but just, like, of something would happen. Like, something terrible is going to happen. Like, we can't let this get out. You can't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And I understood where they were coming from, but, like, as the young person, you were just like, but it's okay. I promise. Like, it'll be okay.
Well, they're reacting to Matthew Shepard. They're reacting to lots of other things,
definitely.
Assume, right?
Yeah. And I'm really excited for when Matt and I's generation become parents, like, the way we're going to raise our kids. And I think that's going to be a big turning point, is like when we have kids and how we raise them to just accept sexuality and gender and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the phone call, Tam. Let's grab one more phone call before a break here. Our phone number again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org. Jessica from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Jessica.
Hi. I just wanted to thank the young folks that are speaking today for their bravery and for being able to speak out on the radio.
Yeah.
I just also wanted to talk a little bit about what we see at the Kansas City Anti-Violence Project. I'm the Youth Outreach Coordinator at the Kansas City Anti-Violence Project, and I work with a lot of young people, and people often ask, are things getting better? Are things easy for LGBT young people? And I do just want to comment that while things have gotten better, there still is a long way to go. And supportive allies, supportive adults are a big part of that. And I also commend the young folks for continuing to do this work and really advancing things.
Well, Jessica, enlighten us just a little bit more. When you talk about you're with the KC Anti-Violence Project, what are you seeing out there in terms of the cases coming across your desk?
Absolutely. So I work with the Kansas City Anti-Violence Project. I'm the Youth Outreach Coordinator, and we work with LGBTQ survivors of violence. And what I'm seeing is there, as more and more young people come out, there is a backlash. There is a backlash. So I am seeing still a lot of hate language and violence against against folks who are gender nonconforming or who don't fit into that binary of masculine or feminine gender identity. So we are working more and more with young folks who are transgender and gender nonconforming who are victims of violence and discrimination. So I am happily seeing more and more young folks that are speaking out about this and really working to change this culture. And so I thank all those involved in that effort. We are having an event on Wednesday at 7:30, Wednesday, November 20th, at the Transgender Day of Remembrance.
All right, very quickly, Jessica. All right.
Yeah.
I appreciate the phone call. I'm wondering, Matt Casey, this notion of violence, has it crossed your paths at all, either at school, your private lives at home? What have you seen?
Well, there are still anti-LGBT slurs that get thrown around at school more often than you would think. And, I mean, I would like to say something, but I know that the correct outlet is not to say something, and so I don't most of the time.
But you're hearing it. You're hearing,
yes,
you're hearing tough stuff sometimes.
I do. And mostly it's from people who aren't directing it towards someone. Well, I mean, they are, but it's like to their friend. They'll be like, oh, you're such a... Because I'm not comfortable with that word. I really, really dislike it. But they throw it around as if it's like stupid or you're inferior. And I'm like, that's not what you mean. That's not the context that you mean. Pick a word that makes you intelligent and not the IQ of a rock. Like, seriously, you're going to use that in front of me.
How does that information go down, that retort from yourself?
Oh, it goes down in my head because I don't...
You don't say it.
No. Actually, I did once last year, and I had a positive experience. I was sitting at a lunch table, and these younger guys were sitting at a table near me, and they kept dropping an anti-gay slur, F, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, across the room at their friend. And I just, like, turned and looked at them like, are you serious right now? And then they sort of are like, I'm making a face. And then...
they back off?
No. They sort of swaggered up and were like, oh, you can't do anything. And then they started doing it again. And I got up and I went over to them and I dropped a knowledge bomb. I was like, no, this is not okay. And this is why you are providing a message of hate and you're delivering a message that being gay or LGBT is inferior. I don't think you think that I'm inferior, and I don't think that you think other LGBT people are inferior, but that is the message you are perpetuating when you use a word like that.
And the reaction was what?
They were terrified of me. They looked at me like, oh, he really knows what he's talking about, and he could get us in trouble. And I didn't report
them. That's interesting.
But,
that's interesting.
Later, they came up to me and apologized.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was,
no kidding.
It was fantastic. It was a real learning experience for them, I guess. And I
bet your jaw was on the floor too, am I right?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I think they did it because they didn't know any better and they were ignorant. And that's why I have to take a step back when someone does use that word. It's because they're ignorant to what they're saying and the message that they're perpetuating. And I don't think that most people are hateful. I think that they're ignorant.
What I really appreciate what the caller is doing in the community and supporting the GBLTQ community and helping with the violence issue. I want to say that we're all very aware that bullying still exists. Casey has quite an example we can talk about. But one of the things I think we have to take a step back and remember is that's teenagers on average tend to be equal opportunity offenders. And it isn't just gay people being mistreated or bisexual or lesbian people being mistreated. There are terrible racial bullying behaviors. Mm-hmm. I did a little poll on this before a show about bullying a while back, and I asked people what they were bullied for in school, and they were everything from a ponytail. I had a ponytail, and ponytails weren't accepted in our school, on a girl, to, you know, how I was too poor. I didn't have the nice clothes other people did. I didn't drive. I didn't have a car. My parents couldn't afford it. There are people who said I was bullied because I had too much money in a community where people didn't have much money. There are so many ways to be bullied, and I think, and to be had violence committed against you, that I think we have to remember there's a context of this in our society that isn't just about being queer.
Yeah. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here about gay, bisexual, lesbian, and transgender issues this morning. Our theme, Things Ain't What They Used to Be. Again, our phone number, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. We'll turn our attention to bullying and other topics as well. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed Friday's conversations about a new Kansas City Mafia documentary or our chat with Broadway star Audra McDonald, you can find those at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, we'll discuss how the experience of pregnancy has changed with new technology, and we'll talk politics with one of my idols, journalist Bob Woodward of The Washington Post and Woodward and Bernstein fame. This hour, we're talking about LGBT issues. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw, who's a board-certified family psychologist. We're visiting with Matt, an out gay senior at Lawrence High School, and Casey, a transgendered female-to-male freshman at an area college. They're all here in the studio with us. Lots of phone calls. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. You know, Wes, we were talking about this notion of touching on the idea of bullying. Whenever you talk about the topic of the gay teens, typically bullying comes up. What are you seeing out there? What's your sense of all this?
Well, I think...
Let's get our mics turned back on here. Here we go. You're back on. Yeah.
To yell through other mics.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, I think that Casey really has, I think, a great counterpoint experience with that when he was in Tulsa. And I might defer to you to talk about that.
All right. Tulsa was not the most pleasant experience.
Where you used to live.
Yeah. I grew up there, and I went to my first years of high school there before I moved up here. But it's definitely an area where LGBT is not accepted. I think this past year is the first year they've ever had, like, a GSA or anything like that. They definitely didn't when I lived there.
A GSA meaning?
It's a Gay Straight Alliance. It's a club just of students most of the time. But when I was there, they couldn't find a teacher to support it, and so it just wasn't a thing.
Couldn't find a teacher to support it. Wow.
Yeah. And this was a
at
large
a big
high school.
High school,
yeah,
it.
My graduating class, I want to say, was like upwards of 1,300 kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I'm getting some context here.
That is really
here.
Telling, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, not one teacher, and that was really upsetting for a lot of people. But I had one friend. No, I had two friends. I lied. That were vaguely out with their sexuality, and they had not very good experiences. And I wasn't even really out while I was there. I mean, people found out, which was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But this was, and I talked a little bit earlier about how my parents were like, you can't tell anyone, like, bad things are going to happen. And they were a little bit right. I think the most iconic experience of my high school career there was I was walking down the hallway, just minding my own business, and somebody threw a Bible at me, which I was more in shock than I was offended. I was just like, why would you do that? Like,
yeah. I think you should have picked it up and read the New Testament.
I did pick it up. I have it still. Yeah. But I was just in shock. I was like,
wow. Wow. A Bible.
A Bible just thrown at me. And I mean, that was definitely the most, like, visible thing that, I mean, like, people scratched things into my locker at school. Somebody came and spray painted my house with slurs, and my parents were livid about that one. But I mean, we talk about how acceptance is getting better, and it definitely is, but it also isn't everywhere.
Mm-hmm. How about Lawrence High School, Matt? What are you seeing?
In the way of acceptance?
Bullying.
Bullying.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I know that in past years at school dances, one of my friends, who is a bit flamboyant, has received some negative comments from people, but he doesn't take flack, and it's gone down a lot this year. That I've seen. I haven't really asked him about it. I think I don't experience it because I'm pretty confident, and I've got, I mean, some
friends.
And
you're the homecoming king.
And yeah, I mean, I don't like to say it because it sounds like I'm conceited, and
no,
I'm not.
I'm kidding. I'm giving you a time.
But yeah. I think, yeah, I mean, I haven't really experienced it, and so I don't think I'm a very good gauge on it at LHS.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Do you want to hop in here, Casey? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something real quick. I think Lawrence High is much better about sexuality than they are about gender at this point.
But don't you think that's true in society?
Yeah, that's definitely an overwhelming trend.
State that. The distinction you're making is what, again? State that for me again.
That people are more accepting of, like, sexual identities and, like, sexualities than they are of gender identities or gender nonconformity.
And the difference is what? Help me.
Yeah, I knew he would ask it. Okay, yeah. Casey, here you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, so when you look at, like, the LGBT spectrum.
Right.
Lesbian, gay, and bisexuality are all sexual. Like, that's who you're attracted to. And that's – it's one grouping. And then trans, and there's a couple. There's, like, genderqueer or, like, bigender, agender, and there's some more just gender nonconformity. And that's where your gender identity is different than what is average. And I guess I can just explain the basics of that one, too. The important thing to remember about that is that there is a difference between sex and gender, where the easy way we tell this to people is sex is what's between your legs and gender is what's between your ears.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, being trans, what being trans actually means is just that my gender identity does not match what I was assigned with at birth.
Huh. Okay. Okay. Things used to be so simple, Wes.
Well, and Casey's heard me make the same joke. This is why I always say when I work with trans people, they have to kind of help us catch up. And I appreciate all of them that I see are very good about that and have, a helpful, facilitative spirit about it. Because, you know, Casey knows that we're trying to understand. And that was a great explanation.
Jared writes us this on Twitter, at KCUR. Up to date, as a young person in the LGBTQA community, it's been exciting to see the labels disappear. Mm-hmm. It brings the community together. Let's go back to some calls here. And Jared from Overland Park. Jared, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hello, that was my tweet you just read.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Jared.
You're getting double time here, Jared.
Yeah, I tweeted and I realized I was like, I'm driving. I shouldn't be tweeting. I just wanted to say that we talk a lot about, you know, making it to where sexuality doesn't matter. I think what's important to sort of distinguish is that it's the over-sexualization of our sexuality. We aren't. It's not just sex. It's about who we love. It's about who we are as people. It's a part of our identity. So I think it's important that we don't lose that aspect and that we don't lose the community aspect, because I think without the LGBT community, I would not be where I am today. So I did not have a positive coming out experience with my family. So what I had to do was then surround myself by people who were in the LGBT community, who supported me and were sort of that almost family-type support when I didn't have it at home.
So if I hear you right, Jared, you're saying you don't want the labels to completely disappear because you still need the support.
Correct, yeah. And I think young people in general, I'm 23 now, I've graduated college, I'm working, and I work at a company that's very supportive of the gay community, and, you know, equal treatment is very much present. But I still think with the young people coming up, we talk a lot about gay marriage, and gay marriage is sort of the goal, but there's still not work rights protection, and there's still not things like that, that I think it's important that we keep the LGBT community sort of that identity, but we need to sort of lose that over-sexualization and replace it instead with personification. Instead of being sex objects, we need to become people.
Jared, thank you. And Matt, you want to hop in here?
Yeah, I agree with that, with the over-sexualization of LGBT people. I think it traces
back. I do
back,
too. I think it's an excellent point.
I think it traces all the way back to like the 1950s when it was like shameful and you couldn't say anything, and so people had to like hide out in men's restrooms to have a sexual encounter, and that was the only way they could. And so I think that has trickled down, I guess, into stereotypes today. And I think it definitely affects us today. And I think I agree with what he's saying about personification rather than over-sexualization.
Mm-hmm. I can give a good example of that. A year or two ago, I had a gay couple I was working with. And we went on many weeks and talked about all the things you talk about with a couple. How do you argue, and how do you keep the house clean, and how do you express intimacy and emotion and finance and everything. About the sixth session in, they had to deal with a holiday issue with family, and one is out and one is not. And I looked at them and said, oh, wow, this is the gayest thing we've ever dealt with. And everybody laughed because that hadn't even been at all on the agenda. It was just a couple. And only when that issue became important to them, how to handle the family situation when we're not really roommates, did it become important to me.
We're talking this morning about the sea change in attitudes affecting the LGBT community. 816-235-2888. Let's go to Evan from Overland Park. Evan, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hello. Yeah. I was calling just to say my feeling on why the culture is kind of where it is, where we have this shift where many, many young people feel very similar on the issue, especially those who are educated on it, that basically, you know, sexuality doesn't matter as to who you are as a person. You know, how you identify yourself doesn't matter as to who you are as a person. You are just as valuable as anyone else. And I feel like that's something that a lot of young people understand. I feel like what's holding the culture back as a whole in a lot of ways is the baby boomer generation, which is huge, and the kids that they raised, who are, you know, the parents of a lot of the kids now, who didn't have experiences with outed people throughout most of their lives.
True. Very well put.
Yeah, their opinions and their lack of experience with these people, you know, create a really large room for misinterpretation and things like the over-sexualizing of the, you know, different sexualities and things of that nature. And I think that as those generations phase out and their voices become less amplified, I think our generation is going to have some pretty quick steps forward as far as equality goes.
And as one of those baby boomers, I have to admit to you that I have come to this slowly over the years. I didn't in the 80s or early 90s have any beef with the gay community. I wasn't out talking about a gay agenda or anything, but it just wasn't any community that I felt close to. And the more I've gotten to know folks from that community, the more I find that they're just good people. And the more I think we are exposed to that, the more we become much more empathic for other people's experience.
And Evan, I appreciate the phone call too. Casey, you know, along that same theme, why don't you explain to us a little bit how you came to understand yourself as transgendered, female to male? You know, did you go through a period identifying as gay? What was your own journey to get where you are to this point?
Yeah, I did actually. My early high school career, I did identify as a lesbian because I was like, my liking of girls I realized sooner than my gender identity. And that was a little bit safer too, because I mean, you can hide that better, you know what I mean? And that was, my parents enjoyed that a little bit more. But yeah, I did. And it wasn't until my junior year of high school, really my senior year of high school, is when I came out as trans at school.
You got there how? How did you come to that realization?
Well, I'd always just been kind of uncomfortable with where I was and, like, what people expected from me. And, like, I was never feminine. Like, that was never a thing. I was always very tomboyish, and nobody was really surprised when I came out as trans. But my thing was actually the internet. Other people had experienced this, and then I found out there was a word for it. Like, I'd never heard the word transgender until I was a junior in high school. I had no experience with it. I'd never known anyone who was. And then there was this word, and there were people, and they were like me.
Huh.
And it was this really great feeling of like, wow.
It was a natural, this makes sense now. It was a natural fit.
Yeah,
you just
it
saw
was,
it and
definitely.
Thought, bingo, that's who I am.
Definitely.
Yeah.
This is the good side. You know, we've talked about how problematic the internet can be for sexual development. There's a great example of how helpful it can be as Casey is trying to figure out, who am I? Why do I feel this way? And then there's this whole community and all this information available.
Yeah, Matt, same question. How did you come to understand yourself as gay, and how did you share that with others?
Well, I've always been a bit of a theatrical person, and I'm not perpetuating stereotypes that gay men are in theater, but I am, and I am very flamboyant, and I've always been that way. I've always been a bit of a performer, and when right around puberty hit, I noticed that I was not looking at girls at all, that I was looking at guys. And that was very confusing because that's not what I really expected of myself. And so I actually in eighth grade, to some of my friends, I came out as bisexual. And I dated girls. Huh. That didn't work out. Nothing went down. Like, there was no physical contact at all. Like, at all. And we hung out and we, like, would text each other and be like, hi, I'm just going to talk to you. And then we would sort of peter out and be, this is in name only. And so I was dating my best friend at the time. And I had asked her out at formal. And then I broke up with her saying that it was because we went to different schools, but really it was because I noticed that I cared for her emotionally, but there was nothing physical. Mm-hmm. And so then I got to Lawrence High School as a sophomore, because that was before we have the four-year high school system. And I met a lot of new people, and that was great in itself. But then I was invited to this party with some new friends, and one of the girls that was there had two lesbian parents, and she was telling me about that. And then about halfway through the party, she turned to me and she went, Matt, are you gay? And I just stopped and I sat there. I went, yeah.
I love that story.
Yeah, and matter of fact.
And that was the first time I had ever like said it out loud, ever. And I told the people there, and then I was sort of like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to tell some of my friends at school. And so I did. I came out at school as gay. And then it was about a month and a half later. And this is where Dr. West really likes my story, is I was in a show. I was in the Laramie Project, which is about Matthew Shepard. Right. And so that was all going on. And that's good context, because it was like, oh, we've gotten so much further. And I was realizing that there were other people like me. And but I was still terrified to tell my parents. I don't know why. They've always been supportive of me. They've always loved me unconditionally.
It's a moment, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I texted my mother in the middle of rehearsal, and I told her, I'm gay. And then I gave her a list of the ways I wanted her to react. And I told her, I would like you to not make this a big deal. I would like you to just react normally, and I would like you to treat me in no ways different. And the response I got back was, okay, I love you. Please be home on time.
So she conformed to what
you
wanted to see.
Which was great.
Yeah.
And then when we were in the car later, she was like, do you want to tell your dad or do you want me to? And I was like, can you? Because I couldn't do it in person. And he was sort of seemed a bit shocked at first, but he was totally supportive. And my grandparents are supportive too, which I found surprising, but it's really cool. Hmm.
And I think I love that story. And I think one of the joys that I have in working with folks in this community is also working with their families and trying to sort of give them a checklist of ways to respond.
Yeah.
Matt's the only one I ever know who did that himself, but sort of say, think this through, don't say things you can't take back, come to a peace about it. And then also working with the gay person or lesbian bisexual person to understand this is a process. You just can't. The first show you and I ever did 2 years ago, you said, well, what happens if somebody is at the Thanksgiving table and says, hey, Dad, I'm gay? And that was the only question you asked me that threw me, because I hadn't fully thought through that scene, because it happens all the time and it's not the way to go about it. So folks can plan this and make it a better experience.
You know, for some parents who are listening, Wes, this notion of sort of at what point do kids begin to realize what they are? I assume, like with anything in life, there's a range of ages here. But what's, parents who are listening who are wondering, is there a point where you're too young? Is there a point where, what the typical age range is? Help those folks out.
I will preface this by saying I've had this conversation with a lot of people from the GBLTQ community, and they approved this message, because it could be a little bit controversial. I am not sold on the idea that everybody has this predisposition to be something or something else. I think part of this new era of delabeling is that people we're able to accept as a society that someone can explore and pursue their understanding of themselves, and that we don't have to rigidly turn this into something that's a genetic to make it okay. So that said, my experience of young people is that they are not finished yet. That's a neat thing about them. It's something we should love and embrace about them, that they're growing and becoming. And so if one goes through a period of questioning, that's a good thing. Too often, parents respond to that by saying, well, it's just a phase you're going through, which is like a little prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Please let it just be a phase. And that's not what I mean. What I'm saying is everybody has to learn who they are as a sexual person and explore that and grow with it. And so we early assignment of I am gay or I am bisexual is often, as Casey talked mm-hmm. about earlier, not the final decision. It's a
generally,
growth process.
You know what you are by roughly what grade?
Well, I think it varies tremendously. I do know, and I'm curious what Matt thinks about this. I know absolutely know gay and lesbian people who've known all their lives. I totally believe that. And I know people who only came to this understanding in their 20s or 30s or older. And maybe they had an inkling of it, but this is something that they weren't able to explore or didn't think to explore. So I think it varies.
Matt, we got about 30 seconds left. Hop in here.
Okay. Well, I think that is very true. But I also would like to make the point that we live in a society that is very heteronormative. And the fact that, while yes, we're having all this change, it's still the fact that what's normal is to be heterosexual. And it's like it's perpetuated in the media, in lots of different things. Like as a child, you watch Disney movies and it's a princess who gets rescued by a prince and then they live happily ever after. And actually Disney's first like openly gay character was in Paranorman and it sparked a huge controversy. But that was just last year. And so like as a child, I was raised in a heteronormative style and I think a lot of people were.
We're going to leave our conversation there, but I want to thank Matt and Casey for coming in today and sort of sharing your stories and helping people sort of begin to understand stuff that maybe they don't understand out there. Appreciate you both taking some time.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Wes Crenshaw, always a pleasure.
See you next month.
You
we'll
bet,
talk
Wes.
About freshmen, first year in college.
And my son will be here to talk about it, too.
Awesome.
I haven't asked him yet. I hope he'll be here.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Conflict.
Okay. Yeah. You can find. I don't think so. He'll want to be here, I think. He likes the microphone. You can find more information about our broadcast. Just go to kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, we'll discuss how the experience of pregnancy has changed with new technology, and we'll talk politics with journalistic legend Bob Woodward. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.